NamNab is a podcast that deals with the grisly details of a variety of topics, including true crime cases, government cover-ups, conspiracies, and the paranormal. This content is not suitable for everyone. Viewer discretion is advised.
She was murdered.
We're on.
Sup, my dudes?
Welcome back.
This is Not a Monster, Not a Boogeyman.
I'm Naomi.
I'm Janae.
I'm Les.
And we have a guest again today.
I'm Kenzie.
And today I am going to tell you kind of a really rough case. So I want to start this by saying this is about child abuse, child death, and child neglect.
On Mother's Day, even.
Yeah. But this is a particularly hard one because of the way it pans out. So take care of yourself this one, because it's going to be a rough one. So my sources for this one are Rocky Mountain News, the Denver Post, and Cleveland Clinic. I warn you, if you go to these sources, they go pretty in depth about the death of this child. So just be warned with that. And this case gave me so much fucking anger. It took me about 3 months to complete the research for this case.
Yes.
Wow. Because it's long and it is painful. So with that, here is the Newmaker case. Candace Tiara Elmore was born November 9th, 1989, in Lincolnton, North Carolina, to Angela and Todd Elmore. I want to share with you a little bit more about this family, because her parents are often just written off as terrible people. And there's an interesting example of intergenerational trauma and experiences in this case. And from what I found about all the efforts this family went through, they're not as bad as they're made out to be. This is trauma.
I also want to give another little plug, because I think this will get Alexis excited. This case was a case featured on Law & Order SVU.
Mm-hmm.
And you'll know exactly.
Which one is it?
You'll know when we get there.
God damn it.
Yeah, but it is, and it's one with Stabler in it, so you've definitely seen it.
Dude, did you hear that Stabler's getting his own spinoff?
Oh, I'm so hype about that. I'm sorry.
Christopher Maloney.
Yeah, I'm like, fucking SVU? Yes.
More. Okay, so Angela was a teen mother who had been in and out of the foster system her entire life. She wanted to prove that she could have a better family than the one she had been born into. She married Todd Elmore when she was 17, but only did so to leave her mother, who had a very similar upbringing in foster homes, after she was abandoned by her own mother. Angela did not love Todd, who was 23 when they were married. He was described as a violent man with a history of petty crimes, and that continued into their marriage. So
we all know people who start with petty crimes.
So are we talking like DV then?
A little bit.
Okay.
Angela planned the birth of Candace and did everything for her arrival to make sure Candace was surrounded by love from the moment she was born. And the man Angela's mother married was there to support her and Candace in any way he could. So he was just like a very caring stepfather figure. Like, he was always there with the like camcorder, always there to like document her first moments. He like really gave a shit about this family.
But wasn't her biological father.
Okay. This is her stepfather. They really wanted Candace to be happy, healthy, and a bright child. Candace was surrounded by love from the moment she was born. And this man continued to be, like, the stepfather continued to be very involved in the early years of her life, and even gave Candace her middle name of Tiara. So he was loved by this family. Yeah. Angela and Todd had two more children, Chelsea in 1991 and Michael in 1992. Angela worked very hard to support her young family and went in between many jobs and attempted to go to school, but all attempts were interfered with by Todd, who could not hold down a job and lied often about his intentions over the years when money became tight. Well, and like Todd's way of bringing in money into the household was he would go to the pawn shop and pawned off Candace's high chair, Angela's wedding ring, among many other things. They always made sure, however, that their children had food, were clothed, and had a home. But the police responded often to domestic dispute calls at the home, and police charged Todd with assaulting Angela on at least one occasion. But charges were dropped since Angela couldn't make it to the court on time to testify against him.
Wow. What year are we talking? I'm sorry.
This is like around 1992 or 3.
Ugh. Okay. So a terrible time.
It makes sense.
Yeah.
But we see this in DV cases also, like, just because one person can't get to the court.
Yeah, we do. We see that a lot.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So just drop the charges.
And there's a few other things that I see here about, like, she just didn't have access to a car. That's why she couldn't get there. There was, like...
That was it?
There was physical things keeping her away. Either because Todd would make her do certain things so she couldn't go, or, like, made it so she would not be able to go and testify against him.
Cool.
Bullshit.
Yeah. There was no documentation on Todd's attacks on Angela since the police department had destroyed these files. For I don't know why they did that.
Yeah.
But they destroyed his files.
The fuck?
That doesn't make sense. Like, for why?
Is that even legal for them to do?
No. I mean...
Does it stop them?
Who's going to prosecute them if it's illegal?
Yeah.
The win-win.
Yeah, Angela made the very strong and very dangerous choice to leave Todd and take her children with her in 1992. She was taken to a woman's shelter where Candace celebrated her third birthday. Even from an early age, Candace had a big personality and a temper to match. She protected her mother and all of her siblings and would try to stop her father from hurting her mother, but Candace would be the one to try and hit him right back. Wow. So she was a fighter.
Yeah.
Candace's behavior mirrored that of her mother's when she was growing up. Angela's mother, Mary, had been bounced between 16 foster homes total.
Damn.
When Angela was in the system.
Good
Lord. She stayed with 10 foster families, one for, quote, disturbed children. Angela speaks of the abuse she endured in these homes and the punishment that she was given, and that they were all incredibly inhumane because she knew that the people were only keeping her for a paycheck.
Right.
It's like a fucking sick joke, you know?
Which is not uncommon,
what the fuck?
Though.
Yeah.
That's not
It's like well-known
thing.
Knowledge no, that you don't want to go into the
This project. Case made me want to go into social work so badly because of, like, I'm going to get more into the foster system here, about the social workers involved in this, and not only her mother, but in Candace's story, because it is so, there's so much lack of justice here. And, like, she reported this abuse, and no one gave a fuck. Like, these foster homes were abusing her so badly.
Yeah.
Angela had violent outbursts and was labeled as mentally ill by the state, who offered some treatment but dropped her at the age of 18. Because of this history and the label of being, quote, mentally ill, social services kept a close eye on her, Todd, and the children, eventually taking the kids away from Angela and placing them, too, in foster care for this mental illness thing.
Yeah.
Which is never disclosed. They don't talk about what it is.
Like, we see this all the time, though, right? Is this what you meant by intergenerational? Yeah.
Yeah.
Yep. Well, and, like, this isn't uncommon either in, like, I know Clay and I have had this conversation, my partner and I, about, like, how low-income families, and, like, we both grew up low-income, use that as a tool to, like, argue with each other. Like, I'll call CPS on you and, like, get your kids taken away.
That
it's a not an
true.
Uncommon
yes.
thing in low-income families.
Mm-hmm.
I had, like, my mom had CPS called on her multiple times just out of revenge for no other reason than just they didn't like my mom. Not that I was being neglected or not cared for.
Yeah.
You know?
Mostly.
It's a common thing. So, like...
I've even had CPS called on me for people not liking me as a person.
Right. Yeah.
Wow.
Not
it's
like being
common.
A mom or anything like that.
Yeah. Yeah. And it, like, I'm going to go a little bit more into this because, like, I'm going to go a little bit into the mom's history as well within foster care.
Sure.
And why she was there. But that's really where I got a lot of this intergenerational trauma of, like, the daughter is living out the mother and Candace is living out her mother.
Yeah.
Ugh. So it's incredibly frustrating. And the courts use that intergenerational trauma as leverage, which is fucked. Because they're just like, well, you've been in the foster care system, so you're no good. And so was your mother.
Wow. That's terrible.
So it is frustrating.
That's absolutely terrible.
Angela tried to go to the court to get her children back, but the judge determined that Candace's angry outbursts in the foster care were similar to her mother's and simply stated, like mother, like daughter. And that's a direct quote, by the way.
It's so frustrating.
Mm-hmm. Officials never explained why the children were removed from Angela's care, and the family feared Todd Elmore would try to take the children, so they made the hard decision to terminate parental rights, hoping that she would be adopted into a family who could support her and give her a better life than they could offer because of their low income.
Fucked.
That hurts my heart. Mm-hmm. It hurts my heart.
Yep, especially knowing that what's going to come up.
Yeah.
God. Candace spent the next 2 years in the system until she was adopted by Jean Elizabeth Newmaker. Jean came from a small town, but her grandparents owned a mansion, and the Newmaker family was well known. She graduated with honors from high school and went to university, where she received her master's degree in nursing. She was described by classmates as a busy person, but did not come across as snobbish. She was bossy and reminded people of a drill sergeant. Jean went on to be a pediatric nurse practitioner and wanted to be a single mother. But at the age of 40, even at the age of 40, so she was already a more mature woman by the time that she comes into Candace's life.
Okay.
So on June 14th, 1996, Candace was renamed Candace Elizabeth Newmaker and was brought into her new 5-bedroom home with a large lawn in a golf course neighborhood. Jean took 2 months off to ensure Candace settled and would feel welcome in the new home. So she's moving from this extremely low income, impoverished situation into a rich woman's life. So all of Jean's devotion to making sure Candace had a good life impressed the parents of Candace's new friends. She was sent to the top school in the district, since Jean could only have the best for her new daughter. Teachers at the school remember Candace would snap at other kids and was easy, but was easy to love and a delight to have in class. That bothers me quite a bit, because anytime we say that, like, a child is so mature for their age, that bothers me.
The amount of times I was described as mature for my age when really I was traumatized,
yes,
are so many.
Yes.
Like, I'm not mature for my age. I shouldn't have had to deal with this shit.
No, I don't want to be mature for my age, dude. Yeah. You forced me to be fucking mature.
I'm a fucking 10-year-old. Leave me alone.
Yeah. I've seen things I shouldn't have seen at this age. Is that what you fucking mean?
Yeah.
All my serotonin is gone.
Yeah. I'm already depressed.
I spent 2 years in the system.
Yeah. Cool. Thank you.
Yeah.
It's like that thing of like, oh, you're so resilient. I fucking hate that.
Oh,
I hate that too. Shit when people say
don't
that.
Don't put me in a fucking pedestal.
Don't fucking do that to other people. I can call myself that. You don't get to call me that. So yes. It makes me mad.
Privilege you get to call me that.
Yeah. Yes. One teacher remembers on the first day of class, he could hear Candace outside his classroom fearfully talking to Jean about him. There's a boy in there and I don't like boys. Candace said, but she never displayed any behavior issues in that class in particular. She did not forget about her birth family, however, and when she designed a poster about her life, she mentioned her younger brother and sister that she had left behind. This caused her to be bullied by other children for being adopted, and they told her that the other kids basically told her she was lying about having other siblings.
Wow. What?
Kids are fucking awful.
Yeah, they're ruthless, mean, dude. Man. They're absolutely ruthless.
When a kid calls you ugly, it hurts extra.
Oh, yeah, yes.
True. They're not lying.
They really think you're ugly.
But yeah, Candace basically was like, told him to fuck off, and brought in pictures of her siblings because she still had those.
Mm-hmm.
So she brought those in to prove a point to these kids, like, fuck off. I do have siblings. They're right here. So she still remembered her family, and she still very much loved them. Jean made sure Candace would do whatever she wanted, so she signed her up for various activities and made sure that she could spend time with her friends. Candace was mischievous and didn't show much affection, but teachers knew that this was normal for children her age, and she still impressed everyone with how adult she acted. She showed high levels of compassion and empathy for those around her that exceeded that of a normal child. She was extremely well behaved in class, and these are signs of anxiety in children.
Mm-hmm.
Just saying. And they've experienced trauma usually.
I'm learning so many things right now.
Yeah.
God damn.
But it's because they need to grow up quickly to deal with the situations they've been put in, as mm-hmm. we've mentioned. Candace would play with a girl in her neighborhood that was a few years younger than her and tutor her. And there was one occasion where she told her that she was very lucky to be in a family that loved her. And the young girl, when the younger girl felt like she needed further clarification, she explained that she had been adopted and was born from her mother's heart because she wanted her, And that sometimes mamas don't want their children.
Holy shit, dude.
Yep.
Oh, kids that, are fucked up.
Yeah. So, and I don't know if that's something Jean taught her. It was like the idea of like, my adopted mother wanted me and that's why I'm here.
Yeah.
It's like, it's not even that, like, she felt like she had been given up and she didn't know the whole thing. So yeah. She was hurt.
Sure. I would like to add a comment on that. I was also adopted. And growing up, kids used to tell me that my mom just, like, throw me out on the street and didn't give a fuck about me. Because, like, yeah. At the time, I didn't understand it. So it literally, like, felt like stabs to the heart. So yeah. I could only imagine what that poor kid was going through.
Yeah. Like, why the fuck are kids so fucking mean?
They are.
Where is that coming from?
Dude.
Yeah.
Dude.
I only have to think about, like, how they must have horrible parents.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? Like, how do they talk to some... That only means they're talking to themselves that way. In their heads, they think it's okay to go around
behavior
saying those things to people.
Learned.
Hateful
so
things.
Sad.
Fuck that.
So
oh,
this
my God.
This is a hard mean, case.
Man. Yeah. Oh. Have you guys seen that show, Little Fires Everywhere?
I haven't watched
I've
it
heard
yet.
Of it.
No. I was going to read the book first.
That's my only comment.
That show. So while others saw how well-behaved Candace was as a child, the story was very different at home. Jean had hoped that she could provide a stable home for Candace, but found that Candace would not look her in the eye, hold her, or allow her to show affection. Some of her behavior was even described as assaultive. So she would proceed to take Candace to various professionals to just kind of like figure out what was going on, what was causing these anger outbursts. But I feel like
it's pretty clear.
It's pretty clear.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
She would act wonderfully to outsiders, but she would be moody at home, and she acted like a teenager. She was taken to specialists in ADD and PTSD, as well as doctors and therapists who prescribed her medications.
Of course.
As a fucking child,
yep,
which they're not approved
was
to fucking
one of
do.
The
yep.
Adderall? Of course it was.
And any fucking prescription meth up in there? Huh?
Not insulting your medications. It's just she's a child.
Yeah.
Right. Like she's a kid.
She's not
maybe.
A fucking
and
monkey.
Also, she's been traumatized.
Yeah.
So
but they never take that into account. Ever.
No.
Ever. They do what makes them more money.
Yeah.
Essentially.
100%.
Or even the parent there. It's like
mm-hmm.
what you feel in control of.
Yes.
And
yep.
I blame the parent as well.
Yeah. Yep. Well, let's get more into that. So the medications did not help Candace's behavior, and her adoptive mother actually felt like she was getting worse and would allegedly now play with matches in the home and purposely kill goldfish.
Well, you made her into a robot, so
yeah.
She's only doing what her fucking conscience is doing.
And like those medications are not approved for people under the age of 18 and actually make conditions
worse.
Yes.
Because
and she could be suicidal.
They're not hormonally developed enough to fucking take them.
There's a reason we cannot ethically diagnose children.
How old
Absolutely.
Is this person at this point?
This
little girl.
I want to say she's 11 or 12.
Mm-mm.
Oh my
Mm-mm.
God.
So young.
Jesus
I'm
Christ, people.
I'm going to get into ages really specifically here. But yeah, she's really young.
Trash.
So William Goebel, who was a licensed psychiatrist, was speaking at a conference in Virginia on reactive attachment disorder in 1999. I see Janae
reactive?
Cringing
I'm
over
sorry.
Attachment disorder.
Yeah, sorry.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
Reactive attachment disorder is caused when a child or newborn does not form a secure or healthy connection with their parent or caretakers. Sometimes children presented like they fear their caretakers, even in situations where the parents are shown to be nurturing and loving. This is most commonly found in infants 9 months old to children 5 years of age who have experienced multiple traumatic events in early life or were emotionally or physically abused or neglected. So it's a heavy, heavy Whoa. Diagnosis.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Wait, but she doesn't have her real parents right now. Like, isn't that clearly an issue in that
we're
whole
gonna get
thought
into
process?
That.
Like,
We'll get into it. Because a lot of this straight up boils down to the ethics of therapy.
Yes.
At the end of it.
At the end of this is entirely, this is a ethical issue within our line of work, actually.
Mm. Yeah.
So.
Which is why I thought it would be interesting for you to hear.
Oh,
yes.
Very cool.
It's rough. Yeah. Kids are always rough.
Yeah.
But it brings up an interesting conversation that I think.
Would be we cool all.
Yes.
Could, yeah.
Yeah. the likelihood of a child developing RAD increases when they have been taken away from caretakers that they have a healthy bond with already. So Candace had a healthy bond with her mother. So it was more likely that she had this. It also increases when they have been in multiple foster homes or have been in an orphanage. This disorder leads to them struggling with creating connections with others or just having troubles navigating life. So it is a very long-term thing. I lost it. They also develop issues with managing their emotions, so they often describe being alone, irritable, or sad. Goebel describes how this disorder harmed children and how it could be treated. He was approached by Jean after his presentation, who begged for his help. She had traveled to Virginia to speak to him and see if he could help her, if anything could be done to help Candace. Goebel felt that the mother was set on the RAD diagnosis for her daughter, and after she explained what had happened since the adoption, Goebel felt that based off of what Jean was describing, Candace had a fairly, quote, fairly severe case, and referred Jean to Connell Watkins, who had first taught him about reactive attachment disorder and specialized in attachment therapy, which we'll get into. Just very lightly, this isn't a thing. This isn't a thing.
Attachment therapy?
Mm-mm.
Not a thing.
If you hear this, run.
You'll see why later.
I'm so intrigued.
Me too.
At her practice, he had watched the treatment given to children who were hard to manage and had been diagnosed with RAD. He assured Jean that he had referred dozens of others to the same treatment and that it would be the best place to take Candace. And here is the true meat of the story. Hoping to get her adoptive daughter the care that she needed, the two traveled to Evergreen, Colorado in April 2000. When Candace was 10, sorry, I was speaking a little bit older, she's only 10.
Whoa.
That's terrible.
Oh my God,
it's even worse.
So when Candace was 10, for an intensive therapy treatment that promised to help with Candace's behavioral problems, rage, and form a stronger bond between her and her adoptive mother of 2 weeks, or in 2 weeks. For only $7,000.
This is a nightmare.
Mm-hmm.
What the fuck?
It's like, that sounds too good to be true, so right. It's not.
I'm in the twilight zone right now. I'm terrified. This is my worst nightmare.
Yeah.
Oh my God.
The sessions would be conducted by Connell Watkins and Julie Ponder.
Terrible name.
Carl Watkins. professional in law. No,
I don't even.
So they would be conducting this therapy as well as a couple of, quote, therapeutic foster parents named Britta St. Clair and Jack McDaniel. Jean Newmaker would assist in some of these sessions as well. The attachment center at Evergreen had allegedly helped parents for decades with unruly children and trained therapists on how to work with RAD. The practice was based in attachment therapy, which is a pseudoscience, at best, and was mainly found in Evergreen, Colorado. It was referred to as, quote, rage reduction, rebirthing, compression therapy, corrected attachment therapy, and coercive restraint therapy. This therapy, quote, is mainly used on adopted and fostered children with behavioral problems described as disobedience, lack of gratitude, a lack of attachment or affection to foster or adoptive parents.
What?
Because that's you are so ungrateful that you were adopted by these people that you did not know, you are going to be forcibly restrained.
Yeah. I'm in awe right now.
Mm-hmm.
At the human psyche. Mm-mm. And
this is in
flaws.
2000.
Crazy, dude.
Mm-mm. What?
In this 2000? Is in 2000.
That's
April 2000.
Ago,
I'm going to projectile vomit everywhere.
Yes, here in Colorado.
That's terrible.
Evergreen.
Trash.
Mm-hmm.
God damn it, Colorado, stop being like this.
Why do you breathe? Like, what? Do we have so many
there's something in the water.
These fucking idiots.
Yeah.
Idiots who want to commit crimes.
Yeah. So, by restraining the child, the goal is to cause rage and despair until the child breaks and they are sent into a, quote, infantile state or age regression where they can be more easily reprimanded through being cradled, bottle-fed, and forced eye contact.
Okay, I'm so... Okay. What is attachment therapy? Like, okay, what is this about? Like, is it saying
fake.
That the...
it's fake.
What?
Straight up, it's not
so
a thing.
So is this basically a thing they made up to make all this okay?
Mm-hmm.
That's
It's like
terrible.
A thing they made up to restrain unruly, unwanted children.
Is that to punish them and abuse them?
I'm going to have problems.
Yeah, I'm going to go into like
and
what
trauma.
Specifically yeah, it is. And that is, this is also a warning for you all. I am going to be very detailed here because I do not want these therapists or anyone to ever think that this is a correct form of therapy. And to so know, I want people to know what Candace went through.
Yeah.
Because this is
Absolutely.
Awful.
Okay, this has nothing to do with like codependency or.
No.
Like,
no. No, like straight up, this is fake. Not a thing okay. that you can get licensure in to do. It's not a thing that. Professionals agree is helpful. It's
yeah.
a thing that people agree
Made
is harmful.
This is something they
it's
only
harmful.
Found.
It's
here.
Like conversion therapy, right?
Okay, right,
Most
right, right.
people don't agree that's
it's
helpful because it's
as
not.
Terrible.
Yeah, right.
Right.
It just
there's no
puts
basis
through hell.
Right.
There's no basis.
Same
of
thing.
This.
Okay.
So the goal by restraining the child is to cause that rage and then put them into that infantile state because they basically want to put this child back into a baby so that way it can form that mother bond or this father bond. With the new parent. So that's why it's called rebirthing therapy.
This is wrong on just like so many levels. Like every level, dude.
This is like sickening and like maniacal and
mm-hmm.
mm.
Yes.
So like they do that by torture almost?
I'm gonna say specifically.
Yeah.
Here. Like
that's
what they
so
did,
bad.
What they used.
Oh my god.
So in this therapy, control over the child is the main focus because you want to control a child. That's correct parenting. Sorry, I'm angry.
No, you're good. It's like it's a little person. Like, what did you expect?
Yeah.
You're raising a little human.
You're raising
Who's
a human.
I'm just mad there's like a group of people
no.
who agree
yeah.
on this. And then the parent's like, yeah, sign
that,
me
yeah,
up.
Yeah, that works.
Right? Let's not allow my kid to like be their own little human.
Yeah. yeah.
They're
so
not an individual.
Yeah.
Yeah. The focus here is control over the children. And the focus of the therapy is to emphasize obedience, since it is believed that a child who is attached to their parent should always comply with their parents' demands. This treatment is also used on children with autism for a period of time. So they also try to have autistic children.
No.
That doesn't
no,
even
dude.
Remotely make
Ugh.
Sense.
Yeah. None of this makes sense. No. But... you know, since they tried it on autistic children with autism, they felt like it was because the child had a failure to connect to the mother. So this is on the child. This is the child's fault.
that makes no sense.
So obviously this idea has been discredited.
Right.
This has no basis. This therapy should not be confused for attachment theory and attachment-based therapy. Attachment-based therapy is a type of family therapy where a mental health professional helps a parent and child heal a part of their relationship that has been harmed in order to build a secure emotional connection. This has been mainly used with teenagers who are experiencing depression and or suicidal ideation. Treatment and attachment-based therapy reframes the relationship and focuses on finding the damaged trust in a family unit and then you know helping adolescents find what their strengths are and grow on those and harp on those, so helping them understand like both on the parental side and the child side why that trust has been damaged.
That's
so you can
cool.
see why that works. It's like
yeah.
you know I can see how this would have helped in my own family.
Sure.
Because
yeah.
it's like this has basis. Surprise, there's work behind it.
Right.
But yeah, it's dual where they work with usually only a teenager. In this case, they don't even do this for children.
Mm-hmm.
And the parent to help them both adjust to this new being, this new human being, and giving the teenager space to be a human.
Why
yeah.
wouldn't they practice on like younger and like teenagers?
I think it's an ethical thing. Like treating children is very, very hard.
Right.
And you need specific training. But I can see how this would be extremely helpful. It's
right.
just they
right.
mainly do it with teenagers because it's a lot about like focusing on the individuality of
okay,
that child.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Which really comes when you're in adolescence.
And like what's interesting to me is like, what is the true difference between a child and a teenager? Why do we think it's this huge?
I think it's a sense
group?
Of individuality
yeah.
and independence.
I think
right.
that, yeah.
that makes sense.
I think
that
the actual line that we are taught in school is that When you're a child, you are almost an extension of your parent because you require your parents still when you're in it. Wow. When you're a child. So like you are just an extension of your parent.
This is just eye opening.
This is just my opinion. Yeah. Right. As a mom, like at the same time, even though Jasper, my son, would be like an extension of me, I still allow him to be
his own person.
Yeah. You know? Yeah.
It's more like healthy opinions.
Parenting.
Right.
Right. Yeah. Right. But a lot of people view their children as objects who are just like, this
separate
is my
to them.
Thing.
Yeah. Yes.
Wow. This isn't a little person I'm raising. This is my
separate
thing.
To them.
Yeah. Okay. And when you get into teenager, it's a lot more of like, you start getting that sense of I'm an individual. I'm an individual. This is my individuality, and I can start coming up with my own opinions. Because when you're a child, it's not so much like they're your opinions, or you're kind of parroting what you're taught. And when you're a teenager, you start forming your own. So that's mainly where we see that age.
This is eye opening
from a child to an adolescent. Is that time when they can start forming their own opinions?
Okay,
that is informed by their own learning. Mm-hmm. So. I think that's mainly why they focus on teens here.
Fucking killing it, wife.
Yeah, and with teens, they want to teach responsibility. That's the entire point
that
of
makes
this
sense.
Therapy.
Yeah.
You can see how this is very different from
what we're talking about. Yeah.
So, treatment and attachment therapy could not be more different, traumatic, and harmful to the extent. This is to such an extent that the American Professional Society of Abuse of Children did an investigation into holding therapy, and procedures were found to be coercive, adversive, and the restraining measures were really extreme. These included aversive tickling, punishment.
What the fuck? What? Wait.
What is that?
What?
I'm sorry. What is
tickling? So aversive tickling is like, you know, when someone tickles you so much that you're like screaming at them to stop because you're tickling so much.
I've never experienced that before because I am a bitch when it comes to that. Like, you go get kicked in the face if you want to try to tickle me.
Like, it's to the point where they were using tickling to make this like put the kid beyond the point of laughing into crying.
My God.
So
it's turning something fun into something traumatizing, scary. That
and
is
tickling
terrible.
Already is our body's response to fear, right? We're like,
kind of like, oh God, that's not right.
Yeah.
Yeah. So punishments in the form of restricting access to food, water, and the restroom.
No.
Which
that can cause you infections.
Torture.
Dude, not fucking cool.
Yeah. So basic things needed to live, they would restrict this
from
children.
Why? Because of dependency?
Yep.
Like they want you to
to be dependent.
So they want you to like beg, basically?
Yeah. They would only let you go to the bathroom when they said that you could go to the bathroom. So that way you knew that you had to go and ask your parents for everything.
This
you have to ask them
like
for food. You have to ask them for water. You have to ask them if you can use the restroom.
It's just sadism.
It's their decision.
That's all it is. It's just sadistic.
Fucks. Mm-hmm. That's all it is.
Yep.
This is like almost worse than the toolbox killers, on a sense, because it's like a mass group of people
this
doing
is being
it.
Taught as a type of, quote, therapy.
Yeah.
We can talk about that later. We'll get in that.
No.
So they would also bar social interactions or connections to those outside of the parental figure, which we see a lot in people that later on kind of go off the, you know, become killers.
Yep.
That restriction of connections. And then they would encourage the child to regress to an infant state. This treatment was popular in the 1980s and 1990s, but there was a large influx of older orphans being adopted, usually from Eastern European and Third World countries. At the same time, reactive attachment disorder had just been added to the DSM. So,
what is a DSM? I'm sorry.
So it's a diagnostic.
What's
a manual?
Something manual.
Let me
I'm
Google
sorry.
It.
No, we should fucking
we
know
should
this.
You
we
always just use the DSM.
Told me the real like acronyms before.
Yeah, the DSM is basically what therapists and people in the mental health profession use for diagnosis. It has like the criteria of everything.
Like what they need to meet to be diagnosed with a certain thing.
For it to be like an accepted
a certain number of them in order to be diagnosed officially.
Okay. This is what I thought it was, but I didn't want to sound like a dumbass. So it's the Diagnostic and Statistical Manual of Mental Health Disorders.
Okay.
Yeah. Oh, nice. That makes a lot of sense.
Yeah.
Why would you think you'd be a BSM
5, 6, 9? 5.
Whoa. So, okay. That makes a lot of sense. It's updated. Like hypotheses almost. Yeah. And like you did your research and then you prove it.
And by no means is everything. And they're always correct because we'll put that out there that it is constantly changing. But, yeah, reactive attachment disorder had just been added. So it was the new hot thing to diagnose everything when in the early 1980s, holding therapy was used to question children and receive, quote, detailed disclosures of events experienced when investigating allegations of satanic ritual abuse, but was found to just re-traumatize children. And the forced bonding efforts after the therapy did not produce affection or love for the parents, but would instead create obedience out of fear and a connection more closely related to that of Stockholm syndrome. This was originally used as like in therapy and almost by police, and they already knew this didn't work. They still for some reason wanted to turn it into a therapy. So the parenting techniques given to build a bond with a parent and child after the therapy was referred to as, quote, German Shepherd training, since they would be forced to be immobile and sit for long periods of time given little to no food in order to further break them. This was done by both foster parents in the program after treating the child, and then it was taught to the parent for 2 weeks. So, like, while this kid is in this attachment therapy, they would be living with another set of therapeutic foster parents while the parents are being taught how to continue this treatment at home. So that's why I was kind of in the weird part of, like...
That's
yeah.
So terrible.
It's unethical to say, like, you're going to continue therapy at home with your parents. Like,
yeah.
Your parents are not going to lead therapy. Never.
They're not qualified.
They're not qualified. We have degrees for a reason. But, yeah, they would teach the parent how to continue to break their child at home. In the information that was given out to those who visited the center with their children for treatment, it was described that the children would be held down by two therapists. The kid would be held down on their laps, so one would have the legs, one would have the upper body, and they would both restrain the child down on their laps.
What?
Yeah, that was one form of restrainment. So the therapist that would have the child's head would force eye contact with the therapist until the child broke down sobbing out of rage of being restricted, and the therapist would then soothe the child and gain trust to show them that they would be in control and feel safe with them.
Which is abusive. All of this super abusive.
Mm-hmm.
Super unethical.
So the APCAC, so the organization I mentioned earlier that I'm blanking on, told a very different series of events what the children would endure. So this is a quote from their investigation. A central feature of many of these therapies is the use of psychological, physical, or aggressive means to provoke the child into catharsis, ventilation of rage, and other sorts of acute emotional discharge. To this, a variety of coercive techniques were used, including scheduled holdings, bindings, rib cage stimulation by tickling, pinching, and knuckling, and or licking.
What?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. This is like a cult. It's mm-hmm. weird. Mm-hmm. Why?
You are, this is like, hair quote, sanctioned abuse mm-hmm. of children. Sessions may last from 3 to 5 hours. Some children may have been held down and had several adults lie on top of them, or their faces may have been held so they would be forced to engage in prolonged eye contact. Even though some sessions were to be 3 to 5 hours, some were reportedly lasting longer. Similar but less physically coercive approaches may involve holding the child and psychologically encouraging the child to vent anger towards his or her biological parent. So
manipulating them into having feelings about something.
This is manipulative, extremely manipulative. This treatment resulted in adverse effects and trauma in children and caused at least 6 documented child fatalities.
What? From like suffocation?
I'm going to get into that.
Oh my God.
The conditions mentioned by APCAC were those Candace Newmaker was exposed to when she arrived in Colorado with Jean on April 10th, 2000. Candace began therapy with psychiatrist Dr. John Alston. Her medications to regulate her mood and behavior would change multiple times over the following 2 weeks of therapy, and she
was 2 weeks? I'm sorry. Yep. What?
Yep. She would, like, nonstop 2 weeks of this therapy.
And, like, changing of her medications, though, too.
Constantly.
Like, that's, like, not...
Constantly.
This is bad.
She had no time to regulate. You can only imagine how many times...
6 weeks to know if something's working.
Yeah. And you can only imagine how those were reacting.
How?
Of course it's going to make her lash out in rage because it's...
Yeah.
You're basically making this person suffer mentally.
You're making this person insane because you're drugging them up with different medications within 2 weeks. And not just that, just drugging them up in general. And they're only 10 years old.
Even just the drugging up alone would be pure torture, right?
Well, and then they took away her medications for her depression and ADD. They just straight up took those away.
Turkey took them.
Mm-hmm.
Cool. Great.
So they took those, and all of her medications were given to her on a schedule daily by the foster parents in the home. That she was staying with. They instructed her to refer to him as, quote, Daddy Jack. Daniel had no medical training and was being paid $700 to write a report on Candace's progress for a therapist. He described Candace as entirely gone when under the influence of the mixture of medications.
No shit, she's 10 years old and you made her a fucking zombie. You basically
made her a fucking cocktail of prescriptions.
Yep.
God damn it.
In the week... The first week of therapy, they felt like they had already had a breakthrough. Candace had undergone a 3-hour session where she had been wrapped up in a sheet with her head exposed and Jean had laid across her to form a cross. After that, she was released from the sheet and Jean sat in a chair where Candace was told to crawl to her, lay in her lap like an infant, and be fed by Jean from a plate. Jean finally being allowed to by Candace to hold her sobbed uncontrollably as she fed her.
I've heard of the swaddling therapy before with autistic children.
It works with autistic kids, it's one of the most amazing things with that. But this, comforting
this
and loving.
This is different.
This is, like, torture and abuse.
Yeah.
Yeah.
This is, like, this is not only, she is completely restricted, so she cannot move her arms or legs or her body. On top of that, she has a full adult's weight on her chest.
That's terrible.
Yeah.
So she's restrained and also has
been crushed.
That.
Oh. Yeah. So they held her like that until she broke down.
Oh my God.
On April 19th, so this is 9 days later now, they moved on to the next stage of therapy, rebirthing. Candace was notably... Janae's reaction is exactly...
I'm sorry.
Rebirthing is extremely frowned upon. Extremely.
What does that mean? Okay, you're going to tell me.
Yes. Candace was notably tired, and she had been suffering from nightmares where her birth mother was killing her by dropping her out of a window.
What?
But isn't that come from the adoptive therapy. Parents saying terrible things about them?
This is coming from the therapy.
Yeah.
The therapist takes advantage of the young girl's nightmare and tells Candace that Jean loves her and that wouldn't Candace like to be reborn to her. Candace agrees. The therapy session is filmed on this day and documents when Candace is being told that she needs to be born again and that it will be a hard process. She removes her shoes and socks and is rolled up tightly in fetal position in a sheet. She is told she must crawl out of the birth canal to be born to her new mother. And another blanket is wrapped around her, but this one covers her head. The therapist Connell Watkins sits near Candace's feet. Yeah. sits near Candace's feet and therapist Julie Ponders holds the sheet closed by Candace's head. Foster parents Jack McDaniel and Britta St. Clair sit on either side of Candace's chest and back, and Jean sits by Julie Ponders waiting for Candace to be, quote, born, and is instructed to aim her words at the opening Candace will crawl through. When the four adults, weighing a total of 673 pounds, push on 70-year-old Candace. So they all...
70-pound Candace?
Like, all four adults were all pushing on her from all angles, and this is a total weight of 673 pounds on a 70-pound child.
Yeah.
Yeah. So.
That's terrible.
Yeah. So it's basically like they dug their heels into the ground and pushed with their backs on this kid.
What the f-
Yeah. Yeah. You are crushing a child. So this is the point where I'm going to give a trigger warning, as if the first one wasn't enough. We're probably going to put a timestamp here about when I'm going to stop talking about this. Because a lot of this gets very verbally abusive and hard to listen to. I am only going to say all this because this is where I broke down.
yeah.
I'm going to break down now. And I want everyone to know what this child had to go through. And I want these people's names to be known.
Yeah.
So she struggles to get out of the sheets for 10 minutes before giving up and telling them, I can't do it. I can't do it. I can't breathe. She then tells them she's going to die and she needs air. The therapists continue to push against her and the girl, against the girl and tell her that this is part of being reborn. It is a hard process. At this, the adults pushed even harder. Candace begs again for them to stop pushing because she cannot breathe. A little later, she says, okay, I'm dying. I'm sorry. And the therapist yells back at her, you want to die? Okay, then die. Go ahead and die right now.
To a child.
Jesus Christ.
Yep.
Okay, so they say, they do not stop pushing and they continue to push against her. Jean feels rejected, feeling that Candace does not want to be born to her.
Christ.
Yeah, how this is all about you.
About you in this situation.
She's dead at this point?
No.
She's dying.
No.
She's dying.
But is reassured by Ponders that this is normal and that unattached children were manipulative and that they lied to get out of being reborn. And by saying that they tried to lie by saying they couldn't breathe or needed to go to the bathroom and that they needed to carry on to show her who was in control. 20 minutes later, Candace speaks up again. Please, you said you would give me some oxygen. And slowly after, she vomits and tells the adults, I'm throwing up. I just threw up. I gotta go poop. To which they simply tell her, go ahead. And when she does, Watkins tell her, stay there with your poop and vomit. Half an hour later, Candace is gone silent to the so the therapists tell her to scream for her life.
Yeah, do you see why this is fake bullshit?
Yeah,
this is fake bullshit, y'all.
Understand.
This is not a thing.
Why?
That helps anybody.
So they tell her to scream for her life. Candace gags and defiantly tells them no. Ponder's not pleased with this response, pushes harder on Candace's head with her whole body, telling the others that they need to create more pressure so that way she would need to exit and would have to fight for air. Another 10 minutes pass before Jean asks Candace if she wants to be reborn. Again, Candace says no. Ponders mocks her at this, telling her over and over that she is a quitter and says she is stuck in there in her own puke and poop. As time goes on, they reach inside the blanket to check her breathing, but Watkins reassures her that she is breathing fine. Another 30 minutes later, they reach in again, joke about how sweaty she is, and do not bother to check on her breathing. They joke that they could continue the session forever. 10 minutes go by and they finally decide to end the 70-minute session and unwrap Candace. Watkins is the first to speak. Oh, there she is. She's sleeping in her own vomit. It's only when Candace does not move or respond that they realize she is blue and not breathing.
What exactly was the, like, end goal? Has there been successful rebirths? Like, what exactly
allegedly
was the goal?
Successful rebirth, allegedly, in quotes, because this shit is bullshit.
Right, exactly.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah.
So
that this has worked before to subdue children into submission when really they're fucking terrified. What you did is scare the shit out of them.
I listen to this and I'm like, I cannot imagine a way where I would not be traumatized by this.
No, of course not. I don't get why they think it's beneficial. Like, is it all just abuse and they don't realize they're doing it? Or is it, like,
I think they know exactly
a common exception, like this person's foster mother agreed to?
Here's the thing, though, right? These are marginalized children that people already kind of cast
don't
off,
have a voice,
right?
For, right? They
you
don't
know,
have their
they
own
don't
voice
have
at all.
That.
They don't have an identity,
right,
in society.
So it's very easy to abuse that power, which we see all the time in other aspects. This is just a very specific aspect of
but
it.
But I see a lot of cult mentality happening.
Absolutely.
Of where,
oh,
like,
yes.
They are trusting these people's expertise, quote
unquote.
Professionals,
right? Quote.
Yeah.
And they are, right? These are licensed clinicians who believe in something that isn't real.
Both of these people were licensed. There's a psychologist.
Oh, my God, dude. No, there's a psychiatrist. This is disgusting.
Like, the only people in this situation that were not licensed were the therapeutic foster parents.
Are there licensed people in conversion therapy?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, my God.
Yeah. And they shouldn't have fucking licensure because what they do is terrible.
Yeah, because some people put their own ideology into their practice, and that's where we begin to have issues.
Right. And, like, I don't know about you or you, Kenzie, going into this kind of stuff. This is the kind of shit that got me into this kind of stuff. Because this is the kind of shit that happens when you have unqualified, incompetent people working with vulnerable, scared people.
This is the case that makes me made me start looking into my master's degree in social work.
Yep.
It's almost because of them that my whole life been turned upside down.
Yeah.
They don't realize the real value of their position in people's lives.
Yeah.
So paramedics that arrive on scene notice blood on Candace's nose and that she was cold to the touch and realize that she had been not breathing for a while. The therapists tell the paramedics that it was because Candace had been left alone for a few minutes during a rebirthing therapy, and that caused her to stop breathing. They see further signs of asphyxiation and are able to bring her bring back a very faint heartbeat. She is taken to Children's Hospital and survives the night, but by morning she is pronounced brain dead, and she later dies, and the cause of death is listed as mechanical asphyxiation.
Yeah. Lack of oxygen for that long will kill your brain.
Yep. Jean leaves the state and returns home, and the cause of Candace's death is not revealed to anyone. When she goes back, the cause of Candace's death is not revealed to anyone. Many think that she died in some freak accident and that there were many memorial services for her. It was not until the therapists were arrested on May 18th and 19th that the truth hit the media and was exposed to the town a month later. Her hometown a month later.
So, I'm sorry. How does this woman go back to her normal life and everyone is just cool with the fact that her daughter's gone? She rich? Is like, what's the deal?
I'm going to get into her specifically here a little bit. Okay. I'm going to get into a lot here.
Okay.
Of why this happens.
Okay. Thank you. Sorry. I'm like, no. I don't fucking understand why no one was like, where the fuck is your kid?
It's fine. I was so angry during
that
all
that happens
this.
So frequently.
No, that's honestly fucking true.
Fucking Casey Anthony, like, dude, your kid was gone for like 2 months.
So the case horrified parents that the case horrified parents, and they kept the truth from their children while trying to understand how such a thing could happen. Jean refused to make a comment to the press on what had actually occurred.
I killed my kid, but I'm not gonna say anything about it because I'm a piece of shit.
The therapists and foster parents in this case were all charged with knowingly or recklessly committing child abuse resulting in death, to which all four pleaded not guilty. The foster parents pled not guilty to Candace's death since they had trusted the direction of the therapist, since they had known them for 10 years and believed that they knew what they had been doing. They also felt that they were not guilty since both had been out of the room with Jean when Candace had been unwrapped and were watching the remainder of the session on a monitor. A year later, they pled guilty and were given a 10-year probation sentence with 1,000 hours of community service.
No! No loss of licensure, none of that.
Well, the foster parents didn't have licenses.
Right, but I mean parents. The therapists.
We're getting to that.
Okay.
But listen, like, give me the Dora here.
Shit right now.
That is like saying that you put a bag over your child's head, closed it, and was like, why aren't you breathing?
Yeah.
And walking away expecting that they're going to be fine.
Yeah. Right.
Either way.
Don't tell me they only got 10 years, gnomes. No.
10 years probation. Not even in jail. Probation.
Community service. Oh, my God.
So during trial, therapists Connell Watkins and Julia Ponders were shown to not have had a license. And the videotape of the session was used against them. This is how the video is on a gag order. So
yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah. Yeah, they did that because they didn't want to have a public outcry of over what happened.
Oh, you don't want a fucking public outcry? I guess you shouldn't have killed a kid.
Yeah,
fucking asshole.
God, sorry. Like, what the fuck did you expect to happen?
Oh, I death. Hate everybody.
Watkins and Ponders were found guilty and sentenced to 16 years in prison. 16.
Those are the therapists?
Yep.
They killed a kid.
They should have gotten fucking, like,
life.
Yeah.
Fuck it. Yeah. Interestingly, Candace was not the first child to have died under Watkins' care. No. In 1990, a 13-year-old girl died of an aspirin overdose while in her care for attachment therapy. This death was ruled suicide, and there was a wrongful death lawsuit, but there was nothing concrete enough for the state grievance board to discipline Watkins on.
I'm sorry.
And this is Dora.
What?
This is still Dora in this case.
Yeah.
This is
what?
You're going to say a 13-year-old died of a suicide overdose. Like, would they even understand how to do that at that age?
Yeah.
I mean, like, potentially. Seriously? Yeah, potentially. Yeah. But
it's fucking hard to believe.
It's real convenient. Yeah. Yeah. It's convenient.
Yeah. Yeah.
Also, it's like, then you're at fault for that.
Right, because she was in your care. Your care at the time.
So fuck you.
No, and you're a
and I wonder why she had the access to that fucking shit. Bullshit. All of it's bullshit.
So the grievance board did nothing to discipline Watkins, but they did write a letter where they expressed concerns for the supervision methods used at the treatment center, which I thought was just more interesting for you and I, Janae. Other people, they probably aren't going to understand that sentence, but that's all they did. They sent the letter.
Oh, just make her do some consultation. She'll be fine.
You really should have more one-on-ones. I love Les is just angry breathing.
I'm so upset.
I'm sorry. Continue. How the fuck are these people licensed?
Yeah.
What the fuck?
Mm-hmm.
Jesus fucking Christ.
It's like more harm than you just not being helpful.
Like, just don't be a fucking mental health professional. Like, what the fuck are you doing? And you're damaging people.
Like, in those courses, dude, they're psychopaths. What the hell's up with that?
A lot of people get into mental health to figure out what's wrong with them, and that's the wrong reason to get into mental health.
Yeah.
I'm fucked up, but that is not the reason I got into mental health.
So finally, Jean Newmaker was charged with child abuse resulting in death, which is considered a lesser felony. And should she be found guilty, she would only face 4 to 16 years in prison.
What?
Yeah. Jean surrendered to these charges on May 24th, but was given a 4-year suspended sentence.
Wait. So she didn't have to serve for 4 years after? Is that what that means?
Meaning she didn't have to serve it for 4 years and could do probation instead.
What?
The fact that these people even want to, like, get less punishment for their actions, like, pisses me off. Like,
that's not
there's right. No acknowledging that this was a bad situation and that it was wrong.
Yeah.
By either parties.
Yeah, and like the thing is with this, all of her charges would be expunged from her record.
It's like a slap on the hand. You just adopted some random girl off the street. She didn't
her
fail.
Career is. Right. Pediatric nurse practitioner.
Oh, I forgot that you said that.
Yeah.
Yeah. God.
Yeah. So that Bro. Whole thing was no. just expunged from her record.
What? So she still gets to practice with kids.
This yep. is like the what? This is like what her job is. Yep. Is to tell if someone's alive or not. Yep. Like just their vital signs.
And you would think her training
I'm gonna go jump off.
Would tell her that all this shit that they're trying to do to her child is not safe.
Nurse Wait, can you repeat the last part? I'm sorry.
No, just like you saved that grenade for the very end.
Yeah, I did. Because, like, all of her training in medical school, especially with children.
Yes.
Like, oh she didn't know God. That any of the shit they were doing was wrong?
Real,
that it would
yeah.
kill this child?
No worries.
Anyway.
Just let me go. I'm just like, fuck me, right? Like, that's it.
That's the entire mood.
Oh, my God.
Janae's over there being silent with anger.
I'm fucking pissed right now because, like, I just don't understand.
I don't know how to cope with this information.
Thinking. Like, I just...
So it was later in September that Candace's birth mother Angie was finally mother Angie was finally contacted. She had been holding out hope that one day Candace may come back to her, but
How
instead,
long has dude, it been no. since she died?
Like 6 months. Yeah, this is so she died in April.
She was adopted in like
well the Candace died in April.
Okay,
her mom didn't find out until September.
Oh
That's my fucked God. Up. Like her birth mom didn't tell them. They didn't tell the birth mom until
September.
That's
absolutely terrible.
Yeah. So she had been holding out hope that Candace would one day come back to her, but instead she was heartbroken to learn that her daughter had been killed. The news shook the family, and her anger was directed at social services for taking her daughter, and at Jean for trying to play God and rebirth her daughter.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Dude, you know what, though? Like, mom, like, her mom, she did what she did out of love.
Yep.
Like, those things get neglected all the time of, like, the sacrifice that it takes for a mom to do that.
No, absolutely.
Is huge. Yeah.
Absolutely.
Like, why is it
like
always
we sit here and
negative?
We think that every kid that's in the system is there because of like they've
bad
been abandoned.
Parenting?
That's not the case.
No.
So many people love their children.
There are so many nuances
not
in this.
They
can't.
Where
yeah.
That their kids are.
In fact, that was a better.
Place.
They thought that was a better option
they
for their kid.
They
said
they were
all
love. Yeah.
And being a safe place.
So
yeah.
Do not blame the parent in that case.
Absolutely not. No.
And she probably feels so bad about it.
Well, and it sucks because so many people, when they talk about this case, like I had to dig to find the story about her mother and her like her life story, because so many people were like, yeah, her mom's this teenage mom, and you know, then she was in foster care. It's like that's not her story.
Absolutely.
Do not disgrace this woman that way. There is so much here, and that woman cared about her children.
That's why
and
we
so
take
sad.
It seriously.
And you ignored her
because
she was a survivor.
Like that, yeah.
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 This podcast remembers the victims. Just saying.
Angie asks many questions that also haunt those who investigated this case. How could Jean, who was a licensed pediatric nurse, trust unlicensed therapists? And how could adults who knew it was common knowledge that binding and smothering a child is not safe to safe and continue? And how could they just ignore the pleas of a child who could not breathe and idly stand by as she died? Angie told the social workers that if they took Candace away that they would kill her. Her own time in the foster system showed her how terrible people could be firsthand. And the secrecy of the whole system is designed to protect those who abuse their power and the children get caught up completely neglected by them.
Yep.
The system has now completely erased the identity of Candace Tiara Elmore, and she was never born. And in Colorado, there was a death certificate for Candace Elizabeth Newmaker. Watkins tried and failed to make an appeal to the court and was let out on parole in 2008 after serving 7 years of her 16-year sentence, and has a restriction on contact with children or any type of counseling work. The outrage of the situation was not lost, thankfully. In Colorado and North Carolina, the Candace law was passed and outlaws the practice of rebirthing and any restraining therapy.
Yay.
In
yeah.
those
Thank
two
you.
States.
Thank you. In those two states only?
Yes.
So is this still practiced everywhere else?
It can
it
be.
Can
be.
Okay.
This case, yeah, this case inspired episodes of Law and Order and Law and Order SVU, but is also heavily implied in the web series that we'll be talking about on our Patreon, Petscop.
Yes.
Question.
Yes.
How did you know the transcript of like the what was discussed? Was this recorded?
Yes. So that entire session where she died was videotaped.
That's terrible.
Yeah. So that video is on a gag order, so they cannot release it, but they do have transcripts that they gave out during the trial. But everything was recorded. All those things I said are direct quotes from the therapist. I left out some of them because I already broke down crying during what I read.
Wow.
But there was more.
Yeah.
And I wanted to read as fully as I could what those therapists said, because those were that child's last moments. Those
Thank
are the last
you,
things
Nelms.
She heard.
This was very powerful and
yeah.
very good.
So take care of children, goddammit!
Yes. And also, like, don't do this kind of shit. Like, don't do
Why?
Mental health stuff if you aren't cut out for it.
Why?
Try to be able to recognize that you cannot do it. That is okay. But don't damage people who are already damaged.
Think
it's not
about
fair.
Your actions and how it impacts other people's lives.
Having children
how
is not
is
about you. Yeah. Having children is not because you want something, you want an object. They are people. They are little
right.
people. And you are raising them. And that
having
is your full responsibility.
Is more so having
yep.
something that you brought into this world that's going to make a change in the world being
yeah.
your own thing.
Yeah.
And that
being
said, dude.
I'm so fucking proud of
like,
my
think
kid.
About
like, I don't
fucking
see
that.
How people are like that.
Oh my God.
Yeah.
Think about fucking the toolbox killers, dude.
Yeah.
That guy was given up. Fucking Bittaker was given up at 2 years old.
Yeah.
Mm. And like, did they even fucking care?
Right.
About who their person was?
Right.
right.
No.
And maybe if they would have given a shit and nurtured them.
In the
them.
Beginning?
Right.
Or not had it at all? Anyway.
Yeah. And it's like, they go a little bit more into like the stepfather when he found out that Candace died. Mm-hmm. He was broken. Yeah. Like that man wanted to be a part of that girl's life so badly. And like the mom, like they found there's a transcript of when they go and find Candace's birth mother, mm-hmm. and tell her, they interview her, and she's got pictures of Candace all over the walls. She's got things that she wanted to give Candace when she came back. It's really hard.
I'm heartbroken right
yeah.
now.
Man. And they go, yeah. And it sucks. It sucks. And like she breaks down and she like shows the interviewers everything. Yeah. And if you go to Jean's house, the adoptive mother, she just has a paper sign on the door that says, "No interviews. I will not talk to any press."
Of course she does.
Yeah. But she had a hand in
murdering her child.
Like you murdered child. Your adoptive Newmaker, child.
The Newmaker you face. The Newmaker family her. Is well known in that town. They are one of the oldest families.
Ugh.
So
tarnished reputation, yeah, Newmakers.
They have this mansion and everything, and it's just like she comes from a well-off place, and I feel like that did have a part in her yep. getting off of yeah. all these charges.
Definitely
does.
But yeah, she just won't even talk to the press about it.
Yeah, because the kid was a fucking object to her. Mm-hmm. Candace was an object to her, not just a
fucking
person. Just
like a pet,
person.
Almost. Yep.
Yeah, and if you see pictures of Candace, she is a beautiful, beautiful girl. Mm-hmm. So, yeah.
And then if you want to see pictures of Candace, mm-hmm. Go check out our Instagram and Twitter at NotABoogeyMan on both. And if you have a story you want to tell us, hit us up. NotAMonsterNotABoogeyMan@gmail.com. Also, give us a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts.
Please.
If that's where you listen to us.
Please.
Thank you.
Come back next week. Bye-bye. I think we'll talk about Richard Ramirez next week.
Yes.
So come back for that.
Bye.
Bye. Bye.